Welcome to Flowcast. I'm Sister Beth Murphy, and with me today is my friend Liz Mitchell. Liz is the deputy spokesperson for the Illinois Senate Democrats. When she's not serving the public good with her work at the State House, you'll find her at home in Springfield with her two lovely children and her husband, Gene. The Mitchells are my idea of a real power couple. That's true. When I first met them in 2018, it was to work with Gene on a public prayer service to help heal the wounds of clergy sexual abuse. Since then, I've watched Gene and Liz use their power for the common good in our civic community. I have experienced that their passion is rooted in their life of faith, and particularly in the principles of Catholic social teaching. Embedded in those seven principles is the belief that the purpose of work is to provide dignity and a meaningful life for people. Work is not about serving a market economy, but just the opposite. The market is meant to serve the purposeful, meaningful life of humanity and the creation we inhabit. So that's what Liz and I are going to talk about today. And I want to start by asking Liz, how does your faith shape your life of work and family and how you move about in the world?
Sure, Beth. And thank you so much for having me on today. I am really excited to get to spend some time talking about this with you. One thing that you mentioned about the seven themes of social teaching is very important to me in the way that I organize my life and experience the world is the concept of human dignity, which I do believe weaves through all of the themes. And that is a really lofty concept, but I think it can apply to big ideas like organizing our economy, as you mentioned. And I think we can also look for ways to apply it in our everyday life. And I want to share a story about how I've started thinking about that. When my husband and I were going through our CIA process, we are both Catholic converts, which I will talk more about. One of the priests in our Chicago parish shared something that impacted us both greatly. It's something I think about to this day. We were discussing the dignity inherent in every human being and how to respect that when we encounter such massive problems like homelessness, for example. The father leading the session was discussing the helplessness that we may feel to solve a problem despite wanting to help. For example, maybe you can give $5 to someone you see who is experiencing homelessness, but that may help that one person for one day. And no one person can solve this. And that can feel very disheartening. But he said, remember, if you can't solve everything, at least see the humanity in that person. Look that person in the eyes. Don't look away. Don't put your head down and walk past quickly. Say hello, have a nice day, God bless you. And that's just a small anecdote of what I believe to be the larger Catholic societal teachings that I really try to carry with me in my everyday life. And I feel blessed to be able to live out those teachings in my work as well. In my work with the Senate, we do pass laws that affect everyone in our state, from healthcare access to environmental protection to workers' rights. And I'm just always trying to look to see how do these laws affect the human beings in our state?
I think that's a great example, Liz, of how you bring your faith to work, so to speak. And you've mentioned that when you and Gene were going through the RCIA process, there was the priest at your parish who had an influence in helping you to see that. I wonder what other influences you've had. For example, what led both of you to decide to become Catholic in the first place?
Oh, sure. We both grew up in the Christian faith. My family was Presbyterian. His family was Baptist. So both of us did have church and faith as a large part of our lives growing up. And we did know that we wanted to continue that in our marriage and in our family. During college, I still considered my childhood church my church home. I went back frequently. After graduation, Jean and I actually lived abroad for a year. We both got Fulbright scholarships and spent a year in Moldova in Eastern Europe, teaching English and doing research. So when we came back to America is when we settled in Illinois and spent some time just kind of searching for a church home. I was in graduate school for a time. We started our careers. And in 2015, we were living in Chicago. We had visited several churches, but not found one that we were particularly invested in or felt truly at home with. And one Sunday morning, we were actually just walking around downtown Chicago and passed by Holy Name Cathedral, which is a beautiful parish close to downtown. And there was there was a priest standing outside, and we asked him about visiting, and he said, actually, this is a great day for you to be asking me about this because our RCIA class is having their first meeting today, right now. And it was very fortuitous. It was one of those God moments where it felt like we were being led where we needed to be. And he took us back and had us meet with the RCIA leader. And we just immediately felt that that was where we needed to be. I would say I was drawn to Catholic teachings. I love the way Catholicism really just digs into the Bible and these conversations that we were able to have with the other people who were looking to join the faith were meaningful and deep. We had a great relationship with our sponsor during the RCIA. We were relatively newly married when we started this process. And during the process was when I became pregnant with and had our first son. And our sponsor came to the hospital and brought gifts and cards. And it was a wonderful community building experience being led to the Catholic Church in that way. And we've been in Springfield now since 2017 and have been able to continue our faith down here. Our son went to Blessed Sacrament School for a time. Our daughter is about to start Catholic school in the fall as well. And of course, that's where we met you, Sister Beth. And so I would say we were definitely led to the Catholic Church.
That is really a wonderful story. And clearly that has shaped who you've become as a family as well. What in your life led you to pursue the career in public service that you have now? Like myself, you're a trained journalist and you worked in journalism for a while. And then eventually you moved into the role at the state of Illinois. So what made that happen? What was that about?
Yes, we do both have journalism backgrounds. And I was interested in becoming a journalist to be able to tell stories that impacted people's individual lives and even society as a whole, the kind of investigative reporting that can, you know, motivate societal change and uncover injustices. And as such, I had an early interest in politics and the political world as well. So I pursued political journalism with a double major in political science and journalism. And ultimately, I mean, Sister Beth, you and I, neither one of us is a working reporter right now. My reasoning for it is that there were aspects of the job that I ended up not loving as much. Had to let go of my dream of being a run down the bad guys, investigative journalist. It's not so much the best use of my talents. I discovered after a while, and I started trying to pursue opportunities to utilize my love for writing and my skills, which did lead me to some time working in public relations. But after a short time of that, this opportunity opened up here in Springfield with the Senate Democrats. And it seemed like the perfect way to put together my values and my interest in a career. And it truly has been, you know, as you mentioned in your intro, I do work for the Senate Democrats. I work specifically for the Senate President, President Don Harmon. He is a Democrat. I identify as a Democrat. I vote Democratic, the whole nine yards. And so when I converted to Catholicism, there were some questions. Well, how does that work with your political beliefs? Well, not to get political, but to start out, I would point that I don't believe that the faith has a political side. I think too often people try to pigeonhole religion with one, you know, side of the political spectrum or another. And I don't think that's correct. What attracted me to Catholicism is that the seven teachings speak to my values as a human being. And, you know, if you really dig into them, I don't think that there is a political party that perfectly matches each one of the seven. So I do find my faith very consistent with my work. And the work that I do is relatively broad. So there are big pieces of legislation that I help work on. For example, massive issues like gun violence that can seem like they don't have a solution. And it's hard and it's frustrating, but I always try to keep in mind the lesson from my RCIA speaker in Chicago about doing what we can and making incremental and measurable process. And some of my work is smaller in scope and it's easier to see an impact. For example, some of the senators, I help them organize a back-to-school event that hands out backpacks and school supplies in underserved communities, or even just working with constituents to make sure that they have knowledge of the resources that are available to them. That is a huge part of public service as well. It's a bigger part of public service than I think most people realize, because we read the headlines and everything sounds controversial, or, you know, it's a big fight and people don't agree. 90% of what we do, everyone agrees on and everyone is doing to try to help the people of Illinois.
That's a great point, Liz. I think you've really hit the nail on the head there. You know, as you were talking about organizing those back to school events, I had a relative in my family who was a member of the United States Congress at one point, and he was really known for his constituent services. And I asked him once, I said, I noticed when you come home, people really, really feel like they know you and want to talk to you. And he said, my secret is my staff. He said, I'm only as good as they are. And so I've always remembered that, and I'm thinking about you as I'm thinking about my old cousin George, who's long gone to God now. You know, that's really an important thing. That's just a role of service. It's public service that you're providing. So whether that means crafting legislation or filling backpacks, you're still serving.
Yes, and I most of the people that I work with, and the people that I've encountered who are serving in elected office, we may not always agree on everything, but everyone is there because they want to make a difference.
How do you impart those lessons to your children? I know they're still small, but children absorb the values from their families before they can even understand what they are. How does that look in your home?
That's a great question. And they are small. We do make faith a part of our lives. We are teaching them currently the Hail Mary and the Our Father. My son is about to be seven and he can say both of them, of course, all the way through. My daughter is working on it, and hearing her repeat it after us is just very precious. And my son will even remind us if we sit down to eat, he'll say, I'm waiting on you. Come to the table. I can't start eating until we've said the blessing. He is also of an age where he has started asking questions about the world and being aware of some injustices that he sees. Not for this to be the only theme that we talk about, but he will see, you know, someone with a sign on the street that's, you know, homeless, need help. And, you know, he will witness us, you know, if we have extra cash, give, you know, give some change or give a nod and a wave. And, you know, he notices that. And he's asked me, you know, what is that? Why does that happen? And gosh, those are hard conversations to have with a child. And so I would say that honesty is something that we really value with our children. We don't, you know, try to sugarcoat issues and turn away from some of the things that are more difficult to talk about in life. We try to talk about them in age-appropriate ways, of course, but just being open to having those conversations and then imparting our values, which is that, I mean, we always tell our children, you are not better than anyone else. Everyone is inherently has value. And that's, you know, we don't classify people based on anything superficial. God loves everyone. Everyone has dignity. And my husband, the kids are growing up as part of the labor movement as well. I mean, they grow up alongside our jobs. Gene and I are both originally from Georgia. And so we don't have family living here in town with us. So a lot of the things that we do for work, whether it be a picket line or a late night at the office at the Capitol, the kids have been to both. And so we're exposing them to that kind of work that we do. And we hope that leading by example is going to impart those values into them.
And it will, and it does. And as we all know, children don't always continue to follow in their parents' footsteps, but you give them the best foundation that you can. And you have to trust that God is guiding them, right? That you're not the only ones in this parenting game.
Absolutely. And as with all parents of faith, I'm sure that, you know, everyone relates to there being lots of prayers about whether or not we're doing the right thing and guiding them the right way. So it is very comforting to know that we're not alone in that.
What about the people in your faith community? How does your interaction at the parish influence the way things look in your home or at your job?
Well, one thing that I really appreciate and have loved about Catholicism with young children is that the children are a major part of the parish. And as a child growing up in a Presbyterian household, and my husband experienced the same, there's a lot of children's church events. And so, you know, the children get taken out of a service at a certain time so that they can, you know, and then they have fun and everything, and the adults can listen better. And so at first it was an adjustment to try to sit through, you know, mass and have children that are making noise or children that are, you know, having to be taken to the back and everything. But the more we got used to that, the more we have really appreciated the welcoming and the love that come from other members of the parish to, you know, just sense the joy that's coming from having the children be a part of the faith from an early age, like a full part of the faith from an early age. And we are looking not too far out into the future towards our son's first communion. So we are, of course, very excited about that and looking forward to him learning some more about the faith.
That's wonderful to hear. You know, I think sometimes young couples who are just establishing themselves as a family and maybe just starting to think about having children might find this faith life and work combination a little bit daunting. So I'm wondering if you have any secrets that you want to share. What have you and Jean learned over the years of becoming parents about how you balance faith life and work in a way that is consistent with your values?
It can definitely be daunting to try to figure out how to have time for everything with young children and careers and ideally the kind of community involvement and involvement in a parish that really, you know, it feels like our faith asks of us to do, to be engaged citizens and engaged members of a faith community. There is not an easy answer. I wish I had one. I don't. I would say the biggest thing is, again, just having our children be part of what we do. they can handle it. I think it sets a good example for them, bringing them to Mass, taking them on volunteering opportunities. You know, my husband and I are very active politically, as you can imagine, within the community, and our children have ridden with us in the car and walked sidewalks to knock doors and, you know, drop literature more times than I can count. Sister Beth, when we met, I'm almost positive that our son at about a year and a half old was at that service to, you know, support the victims of sexual abuse. And that's just, for us, that's been what works, is just incorporating our children into every part of our lives. And I think it's beneficial to them as well, and will be in the long run.
Do you and Jean ever have conversations about the choices that you make regarding the kids or your work? Or do you ever need to say, oh gosh, I've got this work event, or how are we going to work this out? Is there any sort of sense of, I mean, maybe you're completely on the page with each other, on the same page with each other, and that doesn't need to happen. But I'm imagining that there are some of those conversations that have to happen in your home. And I'm wondering if you have any advice for young families just starting out about how they might do that.
You mean like prioritizing or logistically mm-hmm. figuring out how to
or multitasking. It might be that you go one way and Jean and the kids go the other. You know, there are things that have to sometimes happen like that.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, that has to happen all the time. This is more logistical advice, I guess, than talking about anything to do with our, you know, value system. But we sit down with a calendar at the beginning of the month and look at what we've got and try to figure out who can take the kids to what, when, and when we need to get a babysitter to help fill the gaps. And so communication, of course, is absolutely key on that. As far as the broader themes of what's important to us as a family, we are on the same page as far as that goes. So we don't have to necessarily sit down every few weeks and think, well, is our faith still important to us? Is our family still important to us? Because, you know, of course it is. But having those conversations, I would say, early on in a marriage and before having children is key.
So did the two of you meet at college?
Yes, we did. My husband is served in the United States Marine Corps for 4 years before attending college. So he is older than me, but we started college at the same time. And we met in a political science class. That's when we became friends. We actually had met each other before, but we got to know each other in a political science class, and then actually got very close as friends on a service learning trip to Moldova, where we both ended up living again for a year after college.
That is really a wonderful love story. Have the kids started asking you about that yet?
No, not really. I think they probably just think that we've just known each other forever and there was no life before us and before them.
Why wouldn't they think that? That is really wonderful. You know, this episode is going to land just before Labor Day. And I think the way that you and Jean are organizing your lives, your relationship to your faith and to your children and your work is really admirable. You do that and have the right to do that because of the sacrifice of a lot of laborers who over 100 years ago needed to draw the attention of the world to the unjust working conditions, the unsafe working conditions for themselves and for minor children who were working at that time. And I think that we don't remember that very often because Labor Day has more or less become the official end of summer, and we forget what it really means. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about Labor Day as we come to the end of the broadcast here.
Yeah, that's a great point. Everything that you said, which is that there's a lot that we take for granted as far as what workers' rights have today, you know, a 5-day work week, a 40-hour work week, weekends, benefits, holidays, time for vacation, time to pursue these things that make us human beings and not just a cog in an economic machine, that allow us to pursue our relationship with God, our faith, to engage with our communities in the way that our faith asks us to. As you said, that is entirely rooted in forming our economy so that people have the ability to do these things. And I do agree that a lot of people, I think, don't, it seems so far away that they don't understand or think about how deplorable working conditions really used to be and how far we've come. And in Illinois, especially, has a lot of roots within the labor justice movement, Mother Jones, the Haymarket Fair. And I do think that people need to just take some time to reflect on what we have to be thankful for that has come in the past, and the fact that there are still work to be done. Lots of work to be done in the labor movement.
And in the legislature.
Yes, there is always more work in the legislature.
You know, our goal is to form a more perfect union, and we haven't gotten there yet, right?
No, it's still a work in progress. The great experiment is ongoing.
It is, and it takes a lot of people like you, many that we don't ever see or hear of, working behind the scenes to make sure that our rights are protected and that we have the best possible civic society in which we can live our lives of faith. So I'm very grateful to both you and Jean for your careers in public service, for the faith-filled way that you are raising your two gorgeous and smart children, and for your willingness to be with us today to share a bit of that. Thank you so much, Liz.
Thank you, Beth.
It's really been a joy catching up with you and talking about the role of faith in shaping your values in your work within your family and the choices that you and Jean make for involvement in our Springfield community and throughout the state. A reminder to our Flowcast listeners that all the resources that we talked about today will be in the show notes for this episode at our website, flowcastlisten.org, or wherever you find your podcasts. The Flow in Flowcast is an acronym for the life of the world, reminding us of our call to imitate Christ, who offered himself for the life of the world. Thanks to my Flowcast teammates, engineer and editor Brandon Durham, and marketing director Jean Ann Miller, and to you, our listeners. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you'll tune in again.